The following program may contain material that is unsuitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Aftermath Radio should not be considered a substitute for services provided by a licensed mental health professional. Good afternoon and welcome to Aftermath Radio, brought to you live from the K-Beach radio station at Cal State Long Beach.
You never know what's going to happen when you press those buttons.
Never know.
It sounds like it's working. Good afternoon. Welcome to Aftermath Radio. I'm Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. And where's the volume going, G?
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead and kick that up. Kick it up a notch. There you go.
Is
now I can hear myself. Yeah, it sounds good.
Okay.
I like that. Who is that guy? Sounds good. If you'd like to talk to us about all things psychopathic, call us area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. You may Skype us at aftermath.radio. You may email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. And as always, we encourage you to check out our website, aftermathradio.org. Click on the link in the lower left-hand corner that says Aftermath Radio, and all of our podcasts are there for you to listen to at your leisure. So, Gigi Brar, how are you today?
That's how I am.
Just silence. Okay.
Semester is... it's hard right now. I'm just stressed.
Some difficulties with the school?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we already lost one board operator.
I know. Right? I can't lose another one.
He surrendered. I'm just kidding.
Just, wherever you are, Brian, thanks.
Actually, Brian's supposed to be with us next week, right?
He has to.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's really no choice. Good. Good. Okay. And Chantel Fahmy.
I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
I feel like after this week, the semester is going to wind down a lot for me. So I'm excited about that.
It's weird how it's already almost mid-November.
Yeah, what?
And I was telling my students today, November is kind of like a throwaway month. You know what I mean? You have Thanksgiving, so that takes a week out of it. And then we're going to be gone next week, which I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But and then all of a sudden we're in final exams and that's it. We're done.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. And Chantel Fahmy, actually, against her better judgment, signed on to be my teaching assistant next semester for research methods.
I already know that was a mistake.
You'll be regretting that one. Very good. Okay, actually, very, very excited to have on the show today Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole, who is a retired FBI special agent, used to work as a profiler for the Behavioral Analysis Unit. She's going to talk about her book called Dangerous Instincts. Really looking forward to that. That'll be at the bottom of the hour.
Very excited, actually.
It's going to be great. Just as I'm sort of thinking about it, we, the Aftermath Radio crew, are going to be on the road. When are we leaving? Next week?
Next Tuesday.
I think I'm leaving Tuesday morning, too. We're going to be at the annual meeting of the American Society of Criminology in Washington, D.C. That's like a 4 or 5 day conference, research conference for criminologists, criminal justice professionals. So we'll be there. And we're going to have a special event that we just kind of put together last minute.
So
I called this information up before. We are going to be at the National Museum of Crime and Punishment, which is at 575 7th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. And the reason we're going to be there, two reasons. First of all, we get to get in free because of Dr. Fardella's schmoozing event. Yeah,
right.
Which I guess has free hors d'oeuvres and whatnot, so that'll be good. But also, as it relates to this show, we are going to be broadcasting live on tape from...
Drum roll.
Do you have the drum roll?
Oh,
look at her. She's like looking around. From Ted Bundy's Volkswagen Bug.
We are.
Ted Bundy, one of the sort of the quintessential prototypical psychopath. His VW Bug is on exhibit at this museum. So we thought we would do sort of a live / pre-recorded bit and kind of talk to the folks who are visiting it and inform them about psychopathy. Right? Because we're all about spreading the word. Maybe we'll take some pictures of us like sitting on the hood of the... Or maybe we can do some like reenactments with the... That wouldn't be very tasteful, would it? No, okay, never mind.
Scratch that idea.
All right, so let's get into some Aftermath Radio Q&A, por favor.
Aftermath Radio Q&A.
Ah, gee.
I wasn't sure. That's what I was
looking
at.
It's the email
version.
Okay,
let's try this again.
All right.
mail.
Excellent.
You got to let me know in advance. What
I thought I heard it on both sides of my ear that time. You know how it usually comes in? Oh, no, that's the buzzer. I'm sorry. Never mind. Okay, so just a follow-up email from an email we read last week. This is from an unnamed person in an undisclosed location, which is not the United States. And just she wrote in again, and she had mentioned in her previous email about being stage 8/9, and I didn't know what that meant. Do you guys remember that? Mm. Or were you guys here?
Yes, here. I remember that. I was just as confused.
And apparently, and she wrote back and clarified that, that relates to stages of recovery, 8/9.
Okay.
So there's that, in case anyone was losing sleep this week about that.
Right.
There you go. Okay. Here is another one, again, from an unnamed person in an undisclosed location outside of the United States. Hi, Dr. Shug. I heard the shows on Aftermath Radio, wanted to contact them/you. I couldn't find the email address, so I'm writing you here. And that's perfect, because we encourage people to email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. I wonder if Aftermath Radio would do a show about online psychopaths. I was recently the victim of such in Second Life, which in hindsight, I expect attracts them in the thousands. Do you guys know what Second Life is?
No.
Isn't that kind of a virtual world?
I believe so.
Yeah, something along those lines.
It's becoming more and more popular. It's you take on like this
avatar,
and you have this sort of online personality and have this kind of online
I think
life.
It's kind of like Sims in a sense, but you're not controlling the people. I see Dominic nodding
exactly.
out there. I think he's on the right track.
Gigi, you sound like you're speaking from experience.
No.
No?
You know what? Actually, this is from watching too much TV.
What exactly do you do? I don't understand.
You just kind of live this second life, quote unquote, right? I mean, I don't understand. Like, I have a hard enough time living my own first life. Like,
I don't have
time to live a second life. How do people do that? But I guess it's popular. But you know what it does do is it does allow some people, I think, maybe with a little bit of anxieties about interacting socially, that they're able to, you know, act in ways that they wouldn't normally. Maybe that's what it's all about.
So is it like little fake humans running around?
Yeah, basically.
Well, I don't want to belittle in any way. I mean, it's probably much more to it than that. But interactions with others online, probably a step further than, say, a chat room, because you have these, like you say, these persona, these avatars, right?
I actually had watched an MTV, a True Life thing about it, and this one girl, she was a musician in that Second Life thing, but she didn't have, like, she was nervous performing in front of people.
Right.
So it was, but she wasn't nervous doing it while she was online.
Yeah
so there I don't know, that's where I'd seen it.
Wow, why haven't I heard of this? Where do I live?
Under a rock,
apparently.
All right, well, guess we're out of time. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, back to the email, which is how we got started here. What happened to me and a number of other women I found was that we were actually drawn into a love affair with a particular man. The online relationship takes the same path as an offline relationship. You are, quote-unquote, love-bombed. I've heard that term before. Mm-hmm. Romance, etc., and then apparently the one he's been waiting for all his life. But there are lots of you at the same time, providing narcissistic supply, I assume. Then the mask starts to slip, and it's a whole other story. No money is taken, as far as I know, but you end up with a broken heart. Two of us met this man in real life, and the aftermath has been worse for us. Even though it was mainly an online relationship, the bonding was quite strong. Anyway, I thought it would be a good idea for a show. This one man alone has had quite a number of victims, and I've been talking to other women in Second Life and find out this kind of thing is not uncommon. I believe that virtual worlds provide the extra layer of anonymity that these men need. And there's another side of it. You know, if you're a predator, you do gain this sort of anonymity that may allow you to victimize even easier. So I'd imagine it would appeal to these sort of folks. The women involved are intelligent and educated. I have a degree in psychology and a background in social work, but I still didn't see this particular guy coming. Saw the red flags, but thought they were a misunderstanding because it was an online relationship. I know you're busy, so you might not be able to answer, but I hope you find this interesting and that it might generate something on the radio. Thanks, unnamed emailer. Hmm. And we're never too busy, are we?
No.
We thank you for this email. And actually, I've been emailing back and trying to see if she would like to come on the show, and she's still kind of hesitant, but maybe, I mean, it's a fascinating story. I'd love to hear more about it and certainly hear her side of things.
Absolutely. Or maybe if she's listening, or yes, some of the other people that she have spoken to about the same situation want to come on.
Maybe we can get them all on at the same time. That would be an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I think that's all I have.
Good.
We'll be right back. Be right back, Aftermath Radio, here on KBeach.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Nice. We are back. See how Gigi brought what she just did there? She waited for me to put my face into my water bottle, and then she brought us back from commercial.
I said we were going
psychopath. Psychopath. Just kidding. Aftermath Brady, we are back. If you'd like to speak to us, area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio and turn up the board so there's no...
Sorry.
Or email us at aftermathradio@kvh.com. We have on the line Sandy, I think. Sandy, are you there?
I am certainly here.
That's excellent. What I was trying to do.
How are you doing today, Sandy?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. Thank you. And thank you for joining us. And so we are using your real name, right?
That's for sure.
Great. Okay. This is Sandy Ross, and she's founder of the Hope Portal, right? And you're here today to talk about psychopathy and family law, and you have some experience in this area.
Yes.
So just very briefly, the background of your situation, and then we'll kind of get into this stuff that you wanted to talk about today.
Okay. Well, I've had some personal experience in the family law system, not just personally as a case of my own, but in several individuals who are dealing with people with high psychopathic traits. And I'll put it that way, you know, that none of them were diagnosed with a PCLR or a credible means. It's just the traits. And I think when you're in a family law case, just a couple traits that fall into that diagnosis is enough to do a lot of damage.
Right, that's for sure.
And so basically, the experiences that I was exposed to led me to develop this passion beyond anything to put together what's called the Hope Portal, and to be able to bring awareness, education, support preventative programs for people who are just dating, and solutions to people who are tied up in the family law system and other social systems that are affected by pathological personalities like psychopathy. So I do a lot of work in that area, and I'm really excited about that.
Well, I was just to interrupt you. We at Aftermath at the Foundation often get contacted about this very issue. And it does seem to be there's, I don't know quite how to put it, overrepresentation of folks who are survivors who are dealing with family law situations.
Right. Well, if you think about it, if you look at the personality traits involved here, there's, you know, psychopaths have relationships, and they're charming and wonderful and so on and so forth, and, you know, initially. But if you think about it, the ones that are ending up in family law obviously have problems, right? And then if you take it one step further, those relationships that end up in high conflict cases in family law, I mean, who's going to end up there and fight for years over children and spend millions of dollars, some of them do, mm-hmm. by the way. I mean, you'd have to have something wrong to go that far with these cases. So when you take the features of the personality and you put it into an adversarial system, it's disastrous for everyone. I mean, there's no winners.
Exactly. And the kids in particular are the losers.
Oh, definitely. There's so much research about the damage to these children.
Yeah.
And what the Hope Portal, what my goal is to, you know, in the future, forward thinking, is to get behind a drive for research in the family law arena, because, you know, there's tons of research in the criminal-based population. I mean, we know why that is. It's a little bit easier to do research in that population, but somehow we need to bridge that gap and get these studies into family law as a way to look at what's happening.
Right. And Sandy, so you're doing some trainings right now currently?
Yes, I am. Right now,
tell us about that.
I'm invited regularly to speak to trainings to professional supervised visitation monitors in family law. When kids are at risk, they end up with monitors on the case. Hopefully, if the case is proven to go that way. But so I speak once or twice a month to professional monitors, teaching them about the traits within. Actually, I focus on the entire Cluster B group, just focusing on the traits within that group and how that would drive conflict.
And when you say Cluster B, you're referring to the DSM personality disorders lumped together, which are histrionic, narcissistic, borderline, and antisocial. That's what Cluster B means.
Yes. And because of where we're at, when I walk into the room, if you say the word psychopath, it's a little scary. It's almost like you have to slowly go into that.
Right. Some folks aren't ready to hear that.
These Hollywood versions of psychopathy, and what I try to do is introduce narcissistic personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, and look at the features of that, and then I basically go into Nalan's version of psychopathy, which is the mixture of those features.
Right. Well, then, what sort of issues come up in court cases where litigants have sort of high psychopathic traits?
Well, the litigation just goes on and on and on and on. And when you walk into the courtroom, everybody's at their, trying to be at their best. And when you have the advantage of being a psychopath, and I say that sarcastically, is you have no boundary as far as what you will do. So really, when you have a litigant who's a good person, and good people do get messed up with psychopaths and have kids because they didn't know, right?
Right.
The good person is the one of good conscience. They what happens is the truth. They tell the truth, and the psychopath gets the lie, and they get leverage over that, and they're believed.
Yeah, you really get sort of penalized for playing by the rules.
Exactly.
And I imagine in an adversarial court system that it's even worse.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, no, never mind. Go ahead and finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Well, what I was going to say is I know there's a Dr. Hare worked on a study in 2009, Psychopathy, Homicide in the Courts, mm-hmm. Working the System. And I was just looking at that study. It's the criminal psychopaths, according to the study, are actually getting reduced sentences based on, the study. And successfully, they're able to appeal their sentences to a higher court.
Right.
Imagine what a good-looking person walking into family court, putting a child's picture in front of them on the table, saying, "I just want to see my baby."
Yeah.
I mean, imagine what they do to the court.
I've actually seen that happen in person, and it was nauseating. It really was.
It was nauseating.
Yeah.
And the protective parents, typically female, but obviously can be male, the target parents, I call them, they end up looking like they're the disordered ones because of all the trauma and abuse, and then they're re-abused in the system because they're not believed, and it's just a vicious cycle. So when I train monitors, my goal is to get them to understand that these cases are complicated. I describe what these disorders, how they might manifest, and their job is not about making decisions. It's just about taking notes and, not getting pulled into it or manipulated.
Yeah, that's great. That's good that someone's doing that. Now, you mentioned in your email that you're coordinating some support groups. Did you want to talk about that? We got a couple minutes left, but I'd like you to speak about that if you could.
Yes, what I would like to do, if I may, is give you the phone number. I'm trying to put out a feeler for individuals who are tied into cases of this nature, high conflict cases, and put a feeler out there to see how many would like to be able to join a support group, like low cost or free, depending on the number that we have. I think that the most important
Right. Sandy, why don't you give us a phone number right now, and then I'll put it on our website, and people can get it there as well.
Oh, wonderful. It's toll-free, 877-746-7381. And it's people who are in extreme cases and just need support from peers. It's not a, you know, therapy or legal.
Right. It's a peer support group. I understand.
Exactly.
So that's 877-746-7381.
That's correct, and it's the Hope Portal.
Great. And you're actually close by, aren't you? You're in our neck of the woods.
Yes, I'm not that far away. I'm in El Segundo.
Uh-huh. So it'd be interesting. Maybe one of these days we can have you come in for like an in-studio thing.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, you're always welcome, certainly.
Thank you.
And any other bits of advice you'd like to give the folks, or is this the best? What's the best way to contact you? Is it this toll-free number, or do you have any other resources available?
This is the number to access, to get access to any of our support services and to me directly. I'm also looking at in January doing a parents group for people, to help them navigate through the legal system as relates to family law, educational.
That's great.
Putting together a curriculum right now for caseworkers to be able to educate on the disorders as they roll over
right.
from family law into, children's or dependency court.
Right.
But I really appreciate the time, and I love what you do, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Sandy. We certainly appreciate you coming on, and as I said before, you're always welcome. Always welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good night.
You too. Take care.
All right, bye-bye. So that was Sandy Ross, founder of the Hope Portal. Sounds like a really good idea, having these sort of peer support networks for folks who are going through the family legal system, family courts. Typically, these are custody issues with children involved, and how, as she mentioned, an individual with psychopathic traits can really work that system and make it just a horrible experience for everyone all around. And prolong it sounds like that's maybe one of the biggest pieces of damage they're able to do, is just make it drag on forever and ever and ever. And I've heard these stories as well. Okay, so coming up after this, we'll have Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole, former FBI criminal profiler, Aftermath Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
We are back. Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. If you'd like to speak with us, please call Erica 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. Now, I'm very excited about our next guest, and I hope she's there. Mary Ellen, are you there?
I am here.
Excellent. Okay, we never know on this show, so that's good. Let me introduce you really quick. This is Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole, retired FBI special agent. She used to be a criminal profiler for the Behavioral Analysis Unit of the FBI. She's a fellow at the American Academy of Forensic Sciences and author of the book Dangerous Instincts, How Gut Feelings Betray Us. Welcome, Dr. O'Toole.
Thank you very much.
And is it okay if we call you Mary Ellen?
Do.
Okay. So I actually have the book in front of me, Mary Ellen, right now.
Oh, good.
And, actually, this is sort of an endorsement. I've gotten about halfway through it, and I have no time for reading at all, so that says something about the book, that I'm able to even get that far. But I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, good. Excellent. I'm glad to hear that.
So we're going to be talking today about a few things in terms of I guess psychopathy and how we read people and how gut instincts can betray us. I guess, first of all, what are some of the biggest mistakes that people make when they're reading other people?
Well, I think one of the biggest mistakes, at least that I've seen in my career as an FBI profiler, is that people use superficial indicators that someone is safe or that someone is okay. And those superficial indicators could be, hey, he has a good job, he's married, he has children, she goes to the same church or the same school as I do, and uses those, what we call indicators, to then conclude, so they must be safe, they must be okay. And those are really superficial, and they're really not indicative of future dangerousness or future threatening behavior. So that's where a lot of people make mistakes, relying solely on that kind of information.
Right. And actually, I got a little bit ahead of myself. I should have actually had you maybe talk a little bit about your career, because that's equally as fascinating. How did you get to where you are now? Can you say a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. Well, I was an FBI agent for 28 years, and more than half of that time I spent with the Behavioral Analysis Unit, which is known as the Profiling Unit, the unit that's highlighted in the TV series Criminal Minds.
Mm-hmm.
And during my time as a FBI profiler, my area of expertise was in psychopathy and serial murders and violent offenders, and how to read their crime scenes and how to interview these people and really understand what made them tick.
Right. And so you've interviewed your fair share of psychopaths then?
Did interview my fair share of psychopaths, yes.
Any particularly noteworthy cases that you've worked on? Anyone that listeners would recognize?
Sure. I worked on, and for part of my career, I was in the San Francisco FBI office. So I'll think of cases too that are on the West Coast in California. I worked on the Green River serial murder case, and that serial killer is. His name is Gary Ridgway, and Gary is considered the most prolific serial sexual killer in the United States. He pled guilty to 48 homicides in one county. I worked on the Unabomber case, which involved a very smart individual with a PhD in mathematics who was sending bombs throughout the United States, and his career lasted 20 years.
Yeah.
I worked on the Polyclass kidnap case, which was up in Petaluma, California, the Elizabeth Smart case, the Natalie Holloway case, and the Baton Rouge serial killer case, so the Columbine case. So those are a few of the cases I've been involved with.
It's almost like a who's who of serial killers, isn't it?
Well, yes, serial killers are very interesting to a lot of people, and they really do tend to grab the headlines, don't they? So
yeah.
I think people hear about some of the more prolific serial killers over and beyond someone that commits like a singular crime or one crime.
Right. Okay, well, let me take you back then to the original line of we were talking about in terms of reading other people. And in terms of instincts, why are gut instincts, what are gut instincts and how do people feel about their own gut instincts? What can you say about that?
Well, those are two great questions, and I'm actually, from the response of people who hear the title, I'm really learning more. But gut instincts are really normally referred to as this mystical entity inside of your probably stomach area that is kind of this magical navigator. And the problem with that is, you cannot take classes on how to improve your gut. How do you get as good at using your gut as, say, your next door neighbor? If you have gut problems, how do you repair it? So you can already see it's this thing we all think we have, but we can't improve it, define it, describe it, really identify where it is.
Right.
And that's really almost frightening when you think that we can rely on, in some cases, life and death situations relying on this mystical concept. But I am finding that people are just passionate about holding on to the idea that they do have really, really good gut instincts, and that contrary to what they may read about how kind of dangerous it is to rely on that, they're special and they have really good gut instincts. And I would just say to people who feel that that's true, there's a test you can can take in my book, Dangerous Instincts, that will help you get a better sense on, really, do you really think that you do? And if that's the case, then Dangerous Instincts will only help you maybe even improve on your already great gut instincts. But if you take the test and you realize, I rely on this thing and they're not so reliable for me, then this is going to give you, I think, a very good set of tools to help you make some better decisions and read people better and get a better sense of who you can trust and for what reason.
Right. And we often hear a lot of folks through our foundation, even on the show, talking about how, you know, meeting psychopaths and just having this kind of gut feeling that they were good people or that they should be trusted. And then inevitably you hear about how the person ends up harming their lives in all these different ways. And that makes sense that if a person is going through life trusting their gut, they should at least have an assessment of how accurate their gut instinct is. And it sounds like
they
with
really
you
should.
And with this, with your book, it sounds like it's almost a reality check in a way. If you're going to make decisions that way, you should at least know how accurate you are.
Well, that's exactly right. And as you know, with your background and expertise in psychopathy, psychopaths, because of their personality construct, they are very good at coming into people's lives and really persuading them and convincing them that, hey, I'm a good guy here.
Right.
I'm not going to hurt you emotionally, financially, or physically. Look at how glib and charming I am. Look at all the traits and qualities about me that make me just the perfect husband, the perfect babysitter, the perfect whatever it is. And we accept that oftentimes at face value. And I'm sure that you and I both have examples where we ourselves have done that over the course
oh, yeah.
of our lifetime.
Oh, of course. So, right. I wish I would have run across your book maybe 20 years ago. Anyway, so based on your experience, what's so distinctive about psychopaths from other people?
Can you say that to me one more time?
Right. What is so distinctive about psychopaths, you know, in comparison to other people?
Well, I would say in my experience, the most distinctive thing about these individuals is that they can come across to you as, I really care. I feel very strongly that about this, you know, this situation. Or many times I've had them say, "Mary Ellen, I just never would have committed that crime. I never would have hurt my child or my spouse or my partner. I love them. I cared about them." And they can be very believable, up to and including crying and sobbing and swearing they'll do anything to help in the investigation, when in fact they have absolutely no remorse or guilt for what they did, and they in fact are the person responsible for the sexual assault, the kidnapping, the murder, whatever it happened to be. But they were such good actors, you could sit across the table and say, I could almost believe you if I didn't know what I know about psychopathy.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm just listening to you talk, and I'm thinking about in my own clinical work some of the folks that I've sat across the table from, and I feel like, you know, whatever they're doing, they're crying or they're just so believable, and then inevitably I find out that I've been had, and I hate that feeling, but they can be so convincing.
They really can be very convincing, and I think we would all would not be forthright if we said over our careers that had not happened to us. Of course, we've all been taken advantage of and had by these individuals because they are so good at reading people and probably even better at reading most people than we are. So, again, I think that the psychopathy construct is so amazing. They present one way, but in reality, underneath that mask, they're totally different. And people, your folks who are listening to this have to understand, don't jump to the next conclusion that therefore these people must be crazy. They are not out of touch with reality. When we're talking about psychopaths, we're talking about people who clearly know right from wrong. The rules are there. They know the rules are there, but they choose to ignore the rules because it's all about them.
Right. It really is. Okay, so I want to get into your experience and the extent of damage that psychopaths can do, but it looks like we're up against a commercial. Can you hold on for a couple minutes, and we'll talk about that when we come back? Okay. We're talking to Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole, retired FBI special agent here on Aftermath Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shug Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Aftermath Radio.
We are back, Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. If you'd like to speak with us, phone number is area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. And you can Skype us at aftermath.radio and email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. We have on the line Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole. She's a retired FBI special agent, formerly with the Behavioral Analysis Unit. She was a criminal profiler, worked on some very famous, notable cases there. And she now has a book out called Dangerous Instincts, How Gut Feelings Betray Us. And Mary Ellen, are you still there?
I sure am.
Excellent. Okay. So, before break, I was sort of steering us towards your experiences with the extent of damage that psychopaths can do in other people's lives. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think that's absolutely accurate and dead on. And I think an important point to make is that psychopaths can do damage to someone's life, emotionally, physically, financially, and they don't necessarily have to have criminal backgrounds. In fact, I think if you look at the research, as you well know, and most psychopaths are not violent offenders. But
correct.
Because of their personality construct, these are people who are really predators on other people. They may not be out robbing banks and murdering other people, but just by the traits and characteristics of this disorder, they are manipulative and conning. They use people. They're very irresponsible. They are very impulsive. So if you get wrapped up with one of these people, you are going to be hurt. It's not if, but it is that you will be hurt. I think that is, at least in my experience, that's a guarantee. And you will be hurt fairly badly, and the only way you can mitigate that is to really get out of their life and get them out of your life. And oftentimes, that's not very easy.
Yeah, sometimes it's very difficult. They become so ingrained and intertwined with all aspects of your life. It's
right.
Yeah. So how do, and you've worked around and with these serial sexual killers before, how do these folks evolve, since it's estimated that about 95% of them manifest traits of psychopathy? What's your view on that?
Yeah, that's really a question I get asked a lot, how they evolve. And first and foremost, let me say how they don't evolve. They don't just snap. And the snap theory is not alive and well, so they don't wake up one morning and just become a serial sexual killer. It's an evolutionary process. And of course, we know with psychopathy that the current research now suggests a genetic link. And of course, we will need more research down the road to really understand that to a much greater extent. But in a serial sexual killer, you have the presence of psychopathy with all of its traits and characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have what we call paraphilic behaviors. And those are behaviors that used to be called in law enforcement more nuisance offenses, although they can include crimes ranging from peeping Tom, and people, I think, are familiar with that phrase, all the way up to very serious deviant sexual offenses, including something like necrophilia. So it's the combination, the comorbidity primarily of these two disorders in one human being that you tend to see with serial sexual killers. But having said that, it's really important to understand that these people make clear choices about killing. They like to kill. They kill for sexual purposes. And when you interview them, at least in my experience, they are not embarrassed by it. They're not troubled by it. They're not bothered by it. In fact, they're absolutely impressed with themselves and they try to impress you with how smart they are that they were able to get away with it.
Right. It's interesting they brought up the paraphilias because in Bob Hare's psychopathy checklist, one of his items is promiscuous sexual behavior. But I had never really considered the sort of comorbidity with these other disorders, these sort of sexual dysfunctions. And are you talking about the behaviors, the paraphilic behaviors, or actual diagnosable paraphilias themselves?
Well, I would be coming to answer that question from a law enforcement perspective, but these would actually be paraphilic behaviors that have evolved and started to evidence themselves or manifest at a very early age, and then they got worse and worse.
I see. So
as time went on, but they would be consistent with the diagnostic criteria for paraphilic behavior.
I see. So you voyeurism and fetishism and sadism and masochism and those sorts of things.
Right, and at least it's been my experience when I interview someone that has one paraphilic behavior, like in the case of Gary Ridgway, the Green River killer. They don't ever have just one. It's multiple paraphilic behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find so interesting about paraphilic behaviors as they exist in these offenders is that as their paraphilic interests become more severe, which generally I've seen late teens, early 20s, they don't just abandon one and take on the more severe ones, but they take the whole
package.
Like a whole pack, like Santa Claus' backpack of toys.
Right.
They take it all with them as they evolve and get older.
Right. Now, can psychopathic offenders change their personality? And if so, how do they do that?
And again, I would say the answer to that would be no, and another way to say that would be no. the psychopathic personality, at least as we've seen it with some of these really virulent offenders, is that once it's in place, like 20s, early 30s, that that personality is not going to change. Now, maybe the derivative question from that is, do serial killers stop killing on their own? And the answer to that would be some do.
Mm-hmm.
They will stop. And we used to think that they were either incarcerated, dead, or they relocated. Those were the only three reasons why a serial sexual killer would stop. But we have some cases in which they will stop killing and replace that behavior with something else. But it's really a conscious choice. It's not something that they're forced to do. They're told by the neighborhood dog to do it. These are conscious
right.
choices.
I think the BTK killer might be an example of that, where he basically stopped, didn't he, until the police challenged him somehow, and then he started again?
Yeah, that's exactly the example I was thinking of was his case, and he stopped for
years, didn't he?
Yeah, several decades, and what was interesting is a book was about to come out on him, and he may have inferred from the book that he would not be given the proper credit for his crime,
right.
And sort of reinitiated his focus and interest in the case and being given credit.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Now, only got a couple minutes left, and this next question we could probably dedicate a whole show to, but of all the psychopaths that you've interviewed, and it sounds like there have been many, what's the one with the most interesting crime scenes and the one most interesting to talk to?
Well, I would say probably the one, if you're really going to force me to make a choice, which I hate to do, it's like saying, which of your children do you like best? But because I really find these individuals captivating and fascinating. But I would say that David Parker Ray, who I talk about in Dangerous Instincts, probably is one of the most interesting. And he was one of the most severe sexual sadist that I've ever met, and he put together a torture chamber and used this torture chamber for more than 40 years to torture and end up killing people, actually throughout the country, but in the latter years in the Southwest. And when I finally met him, just maybe an hour after I went through his torture chamber, which was just an incredible amount of work.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
He walked down the aisle to meet me. I had to remind myself, Mary Ellen, don't forget what you already know, because this was one of the most charming men that I had ever met. And yet he was responsible for some incredible torture of other human beings.
Wow. What a fascinating story that must have been. Oh, okay. So, Marianne, we're about out of time. How can folks get a hold of your book?
Well, the book is available on places like Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, or they can actually go to my website, which is DangerousInstincts.com, and they will be directed to different sites on the net where they can order it.
Okay. And then it seems like it's been getting good reviews. I noticed on the back that Bob Hare and Paul Babiak wrote some really flattering comments about it, so it's hard to impress
so
those guys.
I know. I'm so thrilled. It's such an honor that they would blurb the book.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with that, and we'd love to have you on again sometime in the future. It sounds like you have a lot of stories that our listeners could definitely benefit from hearing.
I would love it. Thank you so much.
Okay, Marilyn, you have a good night then.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that was Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole, retired FBI special agent. She used to be a real-life criminal profiler.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. You're speechless, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay, so actually, we should probably close up here, right?
Yeah.
It's getting to be that point. So next week we guess who we have next week, who we haven't heard from in a while? Dave Cawson.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to be here.
Dr. Dave Cawson coming back. Oh, you're not going to be here?
I was thinking about calling in.
You should call in. That'd be good.
While I'm on the road.
Checking in with G.
Okay.
Where are you
going
to be?
I'm going to back home to Fresno for my cousin's wedding reception.
Wow.
So I'm
back home to Fresno. That just gives me kind of a rash just hearing that out loud.
I'm really, really excited. I haven't been home in 8 months. So.
Well, that'll be good then. But Dr. Cawson will be talking about interpersonal behaviors associated with psychopathy. They should be good. And we'll post you again or check in again about our live pre-recorded what'd you call it? Event at Ted Bundy's Volkswagen? Would it be safe to call it an event?
If they let us loiter there for hours.
That we might get thrown out. And that would be good radio too, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. In the meantime, you can reach us at 562-912-3541. Leave a voicemail. And you can use our Skype name too, aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. As always, check out the website, aftermathradio.org. All of our podcasts are there for you to listen to at your leisure. And until next week, have a good week. Stay safe. And we'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Aftermath Radio, production of the K Beach radio station at California State University, Long Beach. Produced in association with AftermathSurvivingPsychopathy.org. Your host has been Dr. Robert Shug. Your producers have been Brian Frederick, Chantel Fahmy, and Gurjeet Brar. Join us next Monday at 4 p.m. for another exciting episode. If you or someone you know has been victimized and you'd like to talk to someone, call the Cal State Long Beach Counseling and Psychological Services number at 562-985-4001.